Game On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. We're going to talk to Frank Warren in a few minutes' time on Andy Lee's fight switching to Manchester. Mark Langdon on European football. John Evans on his decision to leave Roscommon. Leinster Rugby and Trinity's research into concussion. Mick McKinnon and Johnny Ward on racing. And anything else that enters our head between now and 8 o'clock. We'd love to hear from you as always. 51552 is our text number at Game On 2FM on Twitter. And Gary Murphy and Conor Mortimer are both with me in studio for the show. Hey, lads.
Hey, you. All good?
Good here.
Pretty good. Did either of you manage to catch the Rose of Tralee last night?
Him and the Counties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you watch any of it, like, on TV?
No, I just seen a clip on Twitter of it.
Right. Did you watch any, Gary?
No.
Well, I did catch some of it last night. And this morning, I woke up to a very good friend of mine's message where he sent me his take on the Rose of Tralee. And it goes a little bit something like this.
And I was the eldest now by about 5 years, so, and my mother died, so I stepped into that role and I looked after my younger siblings as I was a mother figure, and then I left school at 16, and I took on the role. I actually went into college and I did a degree. And went straight on to do my master's, all while looking after my five younger brothers and sisters. And my father, of course, who got sick, and I was looking after him too. And that's when I got the scholarship to London and actually managed to bring them all over with me, because I had saved up from three other jobs that I had on the side. And I kept them all going. And that's where I did my postgrad and my doctorate. And at 22, I was awarded... actually, I came first in all honours and degrees and doctorates and postgrads in Europe. And that's where my name was put in the records forever as the youngest female in the world to achieve the full accolade of being a doctor.
Will you go up and do a jig for that hair?
I couldn't resist playing that. I thought that pretty much sums up the Rose of Tralee. But we'll be watching it later on tonight over a few beers.
My wife has taped it, and it's pollution. Can't do it.
It's pollution. No. It's the worst.
It's funny. There was the winner of the Rose from Tralee, a neighbour of mine, won it last year. The Maria Walsh girl.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she won it last year. So I wouldn't be a fan of it, to be honest. I don't watch it.
Text us your opinions on the Rose of Tralee, 51552 at Game On 2FM on Twitter. Let's go over to Old Trafford though, because a big night for Manchester United and for Louis van Gaal in the Champions League tonight. They play Club Bruges at home, and Darren Stanage is standing by. Darren, I imagine nervous anticipation probably describes this one.
Yeah, I mean, the manager Louis van Gaal talked about the enormous pressure that are on Manchester United today. They're back in the Champions League. The noise you can hear is the very noisy visiting fans that have come over here. And it's hard to know what to expect, really. I mean, you look at the Manchester United team, it's the same side that played against Aston Villa. It's been the same side, same formation, with these two holding midfield players and Wayne Rooney playing a solitary striker with Yann Azai behind. And Manchester United haven't had that flowing football that we've been used to seeing in European competition. And you kind of think, even though a couple of 1-0 wins, obviously a good start for them, I think the fans would be a little nervous if this game ended just by a United win, even by 1-0.
Yeah, because Bruges can defend very well. They can also attack. And as you say, United have hardly been overly impressive in the Premier League so far this season. Wayne Rooney's performance in particular on Friday night was pretty awful. So you'd imagine that, you know, they'd just be anxious to, given what's at stake and the amount of money that's at stake now, Darren, they need to win this pretty comfortably, you imagine.
Well, they do. I mean, you know, United fans, I think, will be looking for this game to, you know, the tide to be over after tonight. I think everyone would love to see Wayne Rooney bag a couple of goals. He had one touch, you know, in the Aston Villa penalty area on Friday night, just one touch, yeah. And that's just, it's unthinkable. He was, obviously a bit fortunate for the opening goal when United scored against Spurs. He was, it was an own goal, obviously, as you know. Rooney was kind of tackled. He should have really pulled the trigger, and he's kind of lacking a little bit. And there is a lot of pressure there, but Van Gaal's kind of deflecting it all, and he's saying to the media, "You guys have been telling me Wayne Rooney should be playing up front. I'm playing him up front. Now you're telling me he shouldn't be playing up front on his own." And, you know, I think everybody would love Wayne Rooney to bag a couple of goals tonight from a Manchester United point of view. And as you said, you know, this is a very organised visiting side. They beat Panathinaikos, who are, you know, normally in the Champions League every year. They beat them 4-1 on aggregate. So, again, they can score goals as well, this team. And although you've not got household names there in the Club Rouge side, you know, they're going to be very organised. This is not going to be an easy game for Manchester United. And I think Louis van Gaal's kind of echoed that. He's talked about that, and he talked about the atmosphere at Old Trafford, kind of emphasising just what a big game this is. And he says, I know that the Manchester United fans will kind of play their part in getting the team over the line.
Okay, Darren, listen, thanks a million for your time. Team news before we leave it, though. Obviously, United have a starting 11 in. I presume that it's as strong as they can pick.
Well, I mean, it is, yep. The only kind of addition to the squad is Fellaini, who's suspended, of course, from domestic competition. He's back involved. He's on the bench today. But in terms of the side, it's Romero in goal. A back four of Damian, who's done very well, the right back. Smalling, Daley Blint as well, who's been playing centre-half. Luke Shaw at left-back. Then we've got Schneiderlin and Carrick in front of the defence. Mata on the right. Januzaj through the middle. And Depay on the left with Wayne Rooney, the solitary striker.
Okay, great stuff, Darren. Thanks a million for that. Enjoy the game. Okay. It'll be interesting to see how Manchester United get on their first European outing. And yeah, we're going to call in to Darren just before the end of the show and see how the first 10 or 15 minutes are going. Okay, let's move on, because I'm delighted to welcome Frank Warren to the show. Hiya, Frank.
How you doing, Johnny?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. Listen, we've had a bit of time to, I suppose, soak in the news that Andy Lee won't be defending his world title in Thomond Park. There's a lot of disappointed fans over here. What's the story as far as you're concerned, Frank? Why has this happened?
Well, unfortunately, Andy picked up a virus, and what that was brought to my attention by his manager, promoter Adam Booth, and the feeling was that, you know, it'd take a couple of weeks for him to get over, and they weren't sure at that time, which was over a week ago, you know, how he would be. From my perspective, I also manage Billy Joe Saunders as well as promoting. You know, I didn't want him in training and the fight wasn't going to happen if he didn't recover or if he wasn't 100%. So I said the most sensible thing to do is to put it back a couple of weeks so that he'd be 100%, so Andy would be 100% and my man could sort of hold up on his training and start again once Andy was fit. But the problem we had, that took us into October. We'd already called a date for Terry Flanagan to fight at the Manchester Arena on that date. The following week, there's another show which Matchmore are involved with. And the week after that, you've got Klitschko and Fury. So which that would have taken us to the end of October, which is the 31st. And even if the venue in Limerick had been available, I don't see us doing an open air show, you know, the day before November. I'm sure nobody wanted to sit in that side in that weather, and, you know, not knowing where it's going to rain, how cold it was going to be, and it just, you know, it just wasn't feasible. So the sensible thing to do was to push the fight back, which we all agreed, and to find an alternative venue. That's how it went up in Manchester.
Because obviously Andy is very disappointed, and he was speaking to the media yesterday. And in fact, I'm just going to play a clip of what he had to say. Have a listen, Frank, please.
It's a little rough. I'm going back to Ireland, actually, catching a flight soon, and have a couple of days rest more, and then I'll start training again at the end of this week. What happened in Limerick, you know how much it meant to me. I've spoke about it at length now, my hometown, and it just wasn't to be. And like I said, you need to be at 100% going into these fights. I know it's going to be a hard fight. I've worked too long and hard to get the belt, and I didn't make the decision. If it was to me, I'd still be fighting Limerick. I'd take a week or two out of training, and I would have been fine to get back into it. But Adam and Frank made the call, you know, and you have to ask them about it, because they made the decision. And I, as much as I protested, it was their decision. And then they're the ones who are promoting it. They're the ones who are taking the risk financially. So it just had to be that way. It's going to be a hard, hard fight. I'm expecting 12 rounds. And I know it's going to be a fiery atmosphere. There's a big Irish community in Manchester. And I expect it to be a good crowd. There's still a lot of support here for me. So it's going to be good.
That's Andy speaking yesterday. I suppose, Frank, it's pretty obvious from that he still wanted to fight in Limerick, and that he's hugely disappointed that that won't happen. And I was kind of thinking to myself, because he's world champion and because this has been his dream for so long, if he had those 2 weeks off, surely he should have been given every chance to kind of prove that this could go ahead.
Well, you know, it's all very well saying that, but what happens if it doesn't go ahead? Then we're back here, we've got the same problem. And in the meantime, people are buying tickets. In the meantime, Billy Joe Saunders and the rest of the guys are training. And if he's not fit to fight, what fights do we put on in Limerick? It just doesn't make sense. And eventually, it's cost us will cost Adam Booth and myself a lot of money anyway because of the cancellation. You had to pay out, you know, as you've seen, press conferences were done. We were flying people in for press conferences. The venue was booked, posters printed, all those sort of things. So a lot of money, lots of expenses have been incurred. But you can't just be in no man's land. It's not like a football game. If somebody gets injured in the team, you bring in a substitute. Unfortunately, that's not what you can do in boxing. So, you know, as Andy said himself in the interview, he's only just started, or he said he's going back in training this week. So he's had 2 weeks out of training. He's got to be 100% from his point of view. And as I say, as far as Billy Joe's concerned, I'm not having him training, you know, with uncertainty. And at the moment, what's happened, yesterday, Adam Booth couldn't attend the press conference because he's got the virus. So his trainer certainly wouldn't be even able to train him. So it's that's where we are. And we're very disappointed for the people in Limerick. You know, obviously we're disappointed. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we've had to do what's the best thing to keep the fight going. And the best way to keep the fight going was to move it to Manchester on the 10th.
Can I ask you how many tickets?
If Andy wins, then there's nothing to stop us getting back to Limerick in the spring. Or if, you know, if it's a very close fight and Bill wins the rematch, Dad. You know, we wanted to be in Limerick. We agreed it. I mean, that's what we agreed to do. It was, you know, not from our point of view that we didn't want to be there. It's just what the illness has caused the problem.
So you wouldn't agree with people who say that this is because the ticket sales weren't up to where you imagined they might be?
Well, who are the people who are saying that? The so-called source is somebody who's a four-round fighter who's fighting on the card, Kieran McDonald. What does he know what's going on with the promotion? He sent a Twitter out, which suddenly went viral, saying, asking if the fight's on to both the boxers. He Twittered both the boxers. And then went on to say, I hear the tickets are not selling. Well, that's ridiculous. Who's he to say whether tickets are not selling? I think actually, I don't know the gentleman's name, but from Limerick, from the stadium, actually said it was going well. From our point of view, we'd sold over 4,000 tickets in the UK for it. So I think up to then we were about 12,500, nearly 13,000. We're in August, which is a very... you know, as we all know, it's a holiday period. I'm quite sure by the time, if the fight had been going on, by the time the 19th, we'd have been fully sold out. So it's just a stupid thing. And it's that malicious trolling stuff that causes unnecessary problems for everybody. That's certainly not the case. Andy Lee had a virus, and that is the end of it. And we've had to make a decision, and we've made the decision.
Well, I suppose just from a, you know, if you want to take an analogy on it, like you say, on a concert now, if a concert was announced tomorrow that was, you know, extremely popular with a capacity of 30,000, you'd expect most of those tickets to be gone a month before the fight was due to go. So,
well, it's not a concert, is it? It's a fight, and tickets for boxing are far more expensive than they are for concerts. And normally for a concert, they don't announce it with 8 weeks to sell a show. A concert's normally on sale at least 6 months before it takes place. So it's a terrible analogy that you come up with.
Well, you're still looking for 20,000 people to buy tickets 1 month between now and the fight was due to take place.
I'm afraid I know a little bit more about it than you do.
Sure.
With the greatest respect.
Yeah.
With the greatest respect, those tickets would have sold. And if they hadn't sold, we would have still gone ahead with the show. But they were selling. So it's just a ridiculous comment, and people are looking for things that don't exist. It's just it does not exist. What the reason that people are, or, you know, what you're saying at the moment doesn't, it's not the reason the flight was cancelled.
No, okay. Well, look, I suppose 12,000 tickets or 13,000 tickets out of 34 doesn't seem like an awful lot. And then obviously you've been in this game for a long time, Frank, and I understand that. So you would have done your costs around certain targets being met.
It's been on sale for less than 3 weeks. I think it was probably on sale for around about 18 days. So that's, you know, that's just a ridiculous scenario. I've had shows that sold out in a day. I've had shows that are slow burners. Joe Calzacchi, when he fought at Cardiff, we sold 54,000 tickets. And I can assure you, 2 weeks before the fight, we'd only sold 30,000 tickets. We sold 24,000 extra tickets in 2 weeks. They're all show different, and you've got to remember there's also a situation where people get paid monthly. They're on holidays in August, and they save their money to the end of the month. I mean, things happen like that. You have to look at all the economic variables with it. But the bottom line of it is, the show was selling very well and it was sold out. I'm absolutely confident in that. And I think, as Loman Park heard it, the gentleman there said the same thing.
You don't think the tickets were too expensive then?
The tickets, look, if you want the show, you want to put a show on, I think, I'm not sure what the prices were, because Adam Booth dealt with that. He dealt with it at the end of it. I think the cheapest ticket was something like 30 quid, wasn't it? 30 euros?
40 euros, I think they were starting at.
40 euros. So that's, pound-wise, that's pound-wise, was it? 140 to the pound? So that's about 30 quid.
Yeah.
To see a world title fight? It's not bad. I've got to tell you, that is very cheap. You look at what they cost in the UK, and they're much more. The cheapest ticket in Manchester is £40, and they've all sold out.
I think the day was cancelled. The only tickets that were actually left were the 500 euro seats, which obviously, not many people.
Well, you keep saying not. I don't know where you're going with this.
I tell you why. Okay, I'll tell you where I'm going, because I listened to Andy Lee. I saw his body language yesterday. I saw him on film, and somebody I've met quite a few times. And I know that this has been his dream since he was a boy to fight in Limerick with a world title belt. I know how excited he was when the announcement was made and the build up and the hype. And I also know that what he said yesterday was, if I had been given 2 weeks off, I know I could have made this fight. And I think, for Andy, I think he should have been given that time. If that's what he wanted, I think he should have been given that time. He's world champion.
Well, unfortunately, that's what he wanted. But as he said also at the press conference, and I don't know what other snippets you played or you cut out, he also said at the same press conference yesterday, it was the right decision. He said because he needed to be 100% to defend his title because it was very important to him. And now, who's going to gamble whether he's 100%? And in the meantime, I've got a guy who allowed him to fight for the world title because he was the mandatory challenger, Billy Joe Saunders, not once but twice stepped aside and allowed him to fight for the world title. And as he said, I'm not prepared to sit around gambling where he's going to training and rack up thousands of pounds worth of expenses and the fight doesn't happen and gets put back. So we've got to respect everybody's wishes, and the common sense thing to do was to postpone it. And if we could have postponed it for a couple of weeks, or till a date in October, we would have done it. But as I mentioned earlier, when I spoke, that there is not a date available to put the fight on in Ireland because there are other shows already on, and we're not going to go head to head with shows that are on Sky TV or ITV.
Okay. Listen, I wasn't trying to be offensive or anything like that, but there's a lot of people here who just don't understand the rationale behind what was done, and we had to tease it out with the, obviously, you and Adam made the decision, so we wanted to try and find out exactly.
I understand, and as I say, I'm very disappointed with them. I'm disappointed for Andy. I'm disappointed, and also I'm disappointed for ourselves because it's not what we wanted. I mean, we went into this with full intention of the show taking place, and more importantly, we have to respect, the other fighters as well are on the card. I mean, there's quite a few other fights that were on there that were to be announced, and we just couldn't take, at the end of the day, that risk. We can't gamble that somebody is going to be fit or not. And as I've just said, as Sod's Law, as they say, he's a manager and trainer. Adam Booth's now got the virus, so he's out of action.
Okay. Frank, thanks so much for taking the call. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. All the best.
Thanks a lot. Frank Warren there. 51552 for your text. We're going to move straight on if we can. Mark Langdon is on the line. Line one. Yeah, cheers, JJ. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. No, not too bad at all. Got to ask you about United's chances tonight. Are you one of these nervous people that think, things could go wrong for them this evening based on their performances over the last couple of weeks?
Well, certainly their performances haven't been that good, but I think that they've been very lucky with the draw that they got. It could have been so much worse. Could have had Lazio, could have had Monaco, and have ended up with Bruges, who are a team that's been decimated by injuries as well. So it should be comfortable enough. I mean, these games are always tricky early on in the season because the Belgian league started earlier. So you maybe think that Bruges have got a slight fitness advantage, but really that there's a big gap in quality. And even though United have not been at their best in the opening two matches, I would expect them to win.
Okay, let's talk about Barcelona for a little bit, Mark, because I suppose if you're looking at their performances over the last couple of weeks, you might be slightly concerned going into the Spanish league that they're not where they should be. Defensive lapses, conceding a lot of goals, obviously Bilbao winning their first trophy in 31 years at their expense. Would you be concerned?
I think you have to be slightly concerned. I mean, obviously, you know, they won the European Super Cup 5-4 against Sevilla, but to concede four goals is already a worrying trend. And then they lost 4-0 in Bilbao. What I would say about that first leg, and that was really crucial to the tie, was the fact that Barcelona had played Sevilla in Georgia on the Tuesday night. That game didn't finish until the early hours of Wednesday morning. Then had to fly back and play a match 2 days later, which wasn't ideal preparation. But the fact that they didn't put up, you know, a great fight in terms of trying to, you know, retrieve the tie, I think is probably more of a concern, actually, because they only scored two goals over the course of the two legs against Athletic Bilbao. And we usually expect Barcelona to score much more than that, even if the defence fouls. So I think there's work to be done, but I'm expecting them to get better as the season goes on. Worth remembering as well that, you know, the Copa America meant that Lionel Messi came back a little bit late. Mm. Neymar's out with mumps at the moment. So there are one or two excuses there, and I would have thought that come sort of the business end of the season, Barcelona will, you know, be back to their best.
Okay, Bayern Munich won pretty well the first weekend in Germany, last weekend Dortmund as well, very impressive. Is it a race between those two, do you think, for the Bundesliga title this season?
Well, I think it's probably a one team race, really. I know that Borussia Dortmund did start well, like you mentioned, 4-0 against Gladbach, a team that's in this season's Champions League. It was a brilliant start for Thomas Tuchel, the new Dortmund coach, of course, first time since 2008 that Jurgen Klopp's not in the Dortmund hot seat. And it really was sort of like watching the old Dortmund, if you like. You know, there's a lot of fast football, and that they looked really good going forward. Aubameyang scored, Mkhitaryan got a couple, Royce was on target, so they played really well. But even that wasn't enough to take them top of the table, because Bayern Munich had already won 5-0 against Hamburg, and they were absolutely devastating. And I think that it was key, really. Pep Guardiola stopped messing around with the team. Philipp Lahm was back at right back. It was a normal formation, 4-2-3-1. A new signing, Douglas Costa, made a real difference on the wings. I think he's going to be a big player in the Champions League this season. He was outstanding.
Is Pep Guardiola staying put, do you think?
No, I wouldn't be so sure on that. I mean, he'll obviously stay for this season unless something drastic, the terrible happens, and, you know, that they went on a horrendous run. But I don't see it being a marriage that's been made in heaven. He, even really from the early days, always felt like he was just going to stay a couple of years. I'm a little bit surprised that he stayed, you know, beyond this summer, actually. But I think he wants one big crack at the Champions League, and that's why, like I said, I think he stopped messing around with the formation. You're going to see more. A more German style, I think, to the team, maybe. You know, just playing normal football, if you like, rather than some of the sort of formations he's dreamt up over the past season. That maybe it was great to watch, but it didn't always work out for them. And I think we're going to see a more efficient Bayern Munich, a more solid team. And I think that's a big threat, really, to the rest of Europe.
Just finally, Mark, you know, there's been kind of a few reports that Otamendi is on his way to Manchester City, and De Bruyne as well, who. We hear there was a £45 million bid put in, I think, and then that was rejected, and he's now furious. He says he wants to go. Nobody consulted him. What's going on here?
Well, I think as far as Otamendi goes, that is very close now to Manchester City. Just gives them even more defensive options. I mean, Mangala started the season well, but Otamendi is a really reliable defender, and that really would, I think, give City a big tick in their box towards winning the Premier League title. As far as De Bruyne goes, there was a big story in Germany last night, because he picked up an award and he was asked on stage, will you be staying at Wolfsburg? And he kind of had to say yes, because if he didn't, it would have caused a massive storm, really. So he said yes, but I still think that if Manchester City can up their offer slightly, this can still be done. This De Bruyne played sensationally last season. He was the best player in the Bundesliga, 20 assists, and he also scored a number of goals as well. He didn't work out for him at Chelsea, but I think sort of the people close to De Bruyne think that was more Jose Mourinho's fault than De Bruyne's. So I think, you know, if De Bruyne goes to a team that's prepared to play attacking football, he can really flourish, and Manchester City would be absolutely perfect from that point of view.
Okay, Mark, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks a million.
Thank you. Bye.
Mark Langdon there, football editor with the Racing Post. I should mention as well that Martin O'Neill named his squad today to play Gibraltar and Georgia in the upcoming qualifiers next month. Still no sign of Jack Grealish, but he has had a conversation with him and his dad, which he said was pretty positive by all accounts, and that there is a decision coming. Let's have a listen to what he's had to say. This is what he had to say on Jack Grealish.
The situation with Jack is had a conversation with him and his father. What was it? Maybe a week or 10 days ago. I thought it was pretty fruitful, and Jack. I think he's going to decide very, very shortly about what he wants to do. Obviously, it's a big decision for him, you know. He would play, obviously, more often for us. Very, very good talent. And England, naturally, I think, would qualify for more competitions than we would do. But it's a decision that he has to give consideration to, because this is just not for something that's overnight. Or something that you sit and repent at leisure. This is going to take him for the rest of his footballing career at international level. So I can understand that, but I think that he and his father have agreed that it's about time that they were going to do something about it. So fine, if he's worth waiting for, in that sense, not necessarily for me, but I'm talking about perhaps maybe for the future for ourselves. Then so be it. He's got that. He's got that edge on his side, and he's got a very decent talent.
Okay, Martin O'Neill there. He also said today, by the way, despite the fact that Gibraltar couldn't bait eggs, as my wife is fond of saying, and they're probably one of the worst teams on the planet, we won't be taking them lightly.
Interesting. He doesn't have too much faith.
No,
I'm taking Gibraltar.
Why can't a manager just come out and say, we're going to stuff these lads by 10 goals, or else I'm resigning?
If we don't win 5-0, I'll walk away.
What do you think, John Evans?
I'm on a different cord. Sorry, I was.
No sweat. Can you hear me? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting. You know, yeah.
Super. Okay, listen, John, it's great to talk to you. I wish it was under different circumstances, to be honest with you. But we're a bit disappointed here that you're no longer involved with Roscommon. Why did you decide to step down?
Well, I suppose. I'm disappointed myself. There's no doubt about it, and. I've had three great years with them. I would consider them three great years, you know, and I'm not going through all the stats or one thing or another. Only suffice to say, in leagues, we lost four games out of 23 games, and the rest we notched up point after point and got promoted from 3-2-1. Going in the right direction, and I don't know how it started. Or where it started, to be quite honest with you, but a lot of rumblings going on that we could be doing a lot better. No, I don't know. Look, looking from the outside in, I thought we were doing pretty well. But look, that's management, that's the way things are, and I suppose there was an active canvassed in that to remove John Evans, and look, that's the way it went. I don't have a qualms with that either.
So where did this movement come from?
I don't know, to be quite honest with you. I know that there was two or three of the people involved in it now would have had sons, all right, that I didn't, I suppose, bring on to the team or bring on to the panel, or I don't know. Or maybe there was a few guys that thought that their sons should be better than what they are. That may be one area. I suppose the other side of it is that maybe they feel that I was a bit stubborn and a bit maybe headstrong, I suppose would be the right one, and I was doing it my way. And
but your way was working, John, if you don't mind me saying. Your way was working. You've already had
it. It was. Yeah. It was working, and the players loved it, and to a man, every single one of them. They really got behind the whole movement, and you know the style of football. It was improving rapidly, and suffice to say that the two or three years before I went there, the highest score, and I really, really looked into this before I took the job, but the highest score that Roscommon were putting up was 111, 112. That was it. I think that on one occasion, out of the three previous years, they got over that. And then we began to hit 117, 118, 120, 24 points, 122, and the confidence was growing. But I suppose, you know, like any county, everybody thinks that they should be moving faster and quicker than what they were. And they weren't really giving the young lads a chance to to mature, and I still don't think they're going to mature fully for another couple of years.
So, John, a couple of disgruntled parents who's, you know, little Johnny didn't get on the team or whatever, and maybe people who expected more than what Roscommon had achieved in the last 2 years, which is, as you say, 3-2-1 in terms of league promotion, upping the style of play that you had. 3-17 against Cavan, I have down here. 4 out of 23 defeats in the league. And a championship that, okay, you didn't have your best game against Sligo, but you went through the qualifiers, you took Cavan, as I said, and then, you know, beaten by what we now know is a very good Fermanagh team. I don't understand how that equates to you walking away or people putting pressure on you to walk away.
Well, it was a bit more than putting pressure on me, now, to be quite honest with you. A few people actively canvassed the clubs to you know, not to reinstate me. And I suppose the other thing, then, and I'd be straight up with this, is that the vice chairman coming in next year, he was one of the people, and he would have said that, look, he wouldn't have had confidence in me with working with me next year. And look, to any manager out there, you only must know one thing, that you need to have your chairman, the chairman that's coming in, the right-hand man. He must be your right-hand man, solid, whether it's club, county, or whatever. He's to be the man that has to back you, and himself and his officials. And look, there was, with him coming in, there was also three or four more new officials coming in. And jeepers, if you were working under door circumstances, leaving Kerry and going for 3.5 hours, I don't know. I just didn't have the belly for that, really.
What did the players say to you, John, when they heard of this? Did you get any feedback from them?
Absolutely. And you know something? A friend of mine taught me that if I can send a text, long, long pages of text, and send them to myself, I can have them on email. They were heartwarming. They were absolutely tremendous to a man. And I'm really, really hurt me to be reading those, because I knew what it meant to the lads. We got our great bond, as you can imagine, over 3 years. You know, when you win so much and you're progressing so much and you're gaining ground and you're raising the flag, the standard. And I mean, the big thing here is that these guys had so much pride now in the jersey. And, you know, when you're with them fighting day in, day out, you know, you certainly, how would I say it? You get a yin for them. You get close to them, I suppose. And, you know, we went up together. We'll go down together.
This is the worst of the GA, if you ask me, John. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, you have a situation where a manager's doing really well, where the players all respect him and like him, as you've just attested to there with the text message you got and the reaction you got when you're stepping down. And yet, a couple of figures in the background who really delegates from clubs, given a job or not, and they make a movement against because they feel that they don't like what you're doing. This is the worst of the GA.
Well, Sean Kelly told me one time, and Sean has seen both sides of it, and he says, John, he says, I'm in politics now, he says, but I'll tell you one thing, he says, GAA politics is the toughest, the roughest you'll ever get in your life. So, look, that's the way it is, because there's colloquialism in it, there's parish, and, you know, there's my Johnny is involved in it, and, you know, this type of thing. But
rubbish.
Look,
it is, it's rubbish. It's absolutely ridiculous, if you ask me.
Okay, yeah, look, at the same time now, I would have to praise the present county board that were there. They did everything. There was a lot of big, I put a lot of big questions to them, a lot of, I suppose, expense to move training, to get the right people involved, to get the right coaches in. And, you know, we move mountains to get where we are. But, look, history, I think, will show that, you know, it won't be too bad for me, really, in Roscommon.
What's next, John? I mean, can I ask you, I mean, Kerry must be in your thoughts somewhere down the line.
Well, the first thing I'm doing is with my good wife. I'm gonna fly out to the sun.
Lovely.
And hope that my brain doesn't get fried and or something like that. I'm going to take a break for a week or two, and we'll see then what really, really happens.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you this season, John. Thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it, as always.
As always, and I'll be hoping that Kerry will rise to it again on Sunday, and we'll have a team to follow and a team to cheer.
Absolutely. Look, we'll talk to you soon, John. Mind yourself. Enjoy the holiday.
Right, God bless.
Thanks, Amin. Bye-bye. John Evans there.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
51552. Our interview with Frank Warren, by the way, JJ's put that out as a SoundCloud on Twitter now. So if you want to, at Game on 2FM on Twitter, and you'll be able to listen to that. 51552 for your text. Connor, mm-hmm. John Evans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, having spoken to a few Roscommon lads and stuff like, and they obviously, as he said, they're a great time for him and stuff like that. I mean, I think people in Roscommon are tend to forget, and they haven't won a county championship in quite a while, or progressed through league campaigns and stuff like that. I mean, they were an easy touch there going back the last 7 or 8 years. And then obviously John Evans came in, and as you've seen, they've back to back promotions the last few years. You know, I know guys in Tipperary have spoke highly of him over the years as well. But look, county boards and stuff nowadays, I mean, it's, if you're not, how would you say it, if you're not kind of a yes man of a manager, you won't survive in some counties. They tend to be the weaker counties that goes on in.
I remember Gerlach Nan said, he actually is in his book as well, that his most important sidekick and backer throughout his entire chairman. Term was the chairman.
Well, John O'Mahony would have been the same in Galway. Like, the chairman of the county board at that time was his ally, we'll say, you know what I mean? Anthony needed, he could go through him, but, you know, the way it's gone down there, you know, obviously in relation to a vice chairman going around to clubs, canvassing for a manager not to be picked, or we don't want him or whatever. I mean, they all have agendas, you know, and we spoke about this going back a few weeks ago, and John was on the show in relation to Shane Kern and a few of the ex-players, you know, giving stick as well. I mean, either support or you don't. I mean, that's, if you're going to say something negative, you don't say anything in relation to your own county manager.
Here's a text in. Very disappointed with your one-sided interview with John Evans. Why didn't you ask him about his championship record with Roscommon from a seasoned Rossi? Well, I did. I mean, in fairness, I did mention the Sligo match. I mentioned the Fermanagh match, which we now know at the standard that Fermanagh set this season. There are no pushover by any stretch. And going to Cavan scoring 317, as I mentioned. And I think, look, you know,
they've improved. You can't, how would you say, you have to crawl before you walk.
Absolutely.
I think people on Roscommon are sort of forgetting that. Like, Mayo have been so strong the last 5 years. I mean, you can go to Galway, lead from Sligo as well, and go through. Why, they haven't won a county championship in the last 5 years. Roscommon are no different. Yet Roscommon have been successful at underage, under 21 and minors. They've won all Ireland's at that level.
Do you know what sickened me? Do you know what sickened me when John came out and said, "Look, I expect this team to be challenging for All-Irelands within the next few years," and people jumped on his back and said, "How dare you put that up there as a carrot?"
But that's what people are saying now after he left. You know, who's going to go on now and bring them on and win All-Ireland, whatever. I mean, John Evans is from Kerry. That's what his GA world revolves around, is going to the last game, the Holy Grail, and win it. He's used to celebrating that with his county, and if he wants to bring that positivity to the likes of Roscommon or Tipperary or teams, you'll see it. The players had belief in that, hence in their performances. They played well in the majority of their games last year, as did Tipperary. Like, where did Tipperary come from football wise since John Evans was there? They've improved immensely, as have Roscommon. But, you know, I mean, they can't win a county championship, so I mean, you know what, to get rid of the manager straight away, who's, they were in Division 4 for going on 3 years, or Division 3, yeah. Yet they're in Division 1 now. And, you know, the county board, they don't want him because...
And look, I take the players' view over everybody else. The players love them. Anyway, look, we're going to come back to this a little bit later on, because we have to move on. Time's against us here. Now, despite a lot of work over the last few years to highlight the dangers and minimalise the risks associated with it, concussion remains an ongoing problem in rugby. Trinity College Dublin, in conjunction with Leinster Rugby, have made some interesting findings in relation to concussion and how it might be prevented further down the line. I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Fiona Wilson, who led the study, to the show. Dr. Wilson, you're very welcome.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Do you mind if I call you Fiona?
That's fine.
Okay,
that's fine.
Brilliant.
Nobody calls me Dr. Wilson.
Okay, great. Well, look, first of all, how did this come about, Trinity and Leinster kind of linking up to go through this study? How did the whole thing start?
Well, Leinster are quite interesting and unusual, that they have a very high standard of support staff working in there, who are all quite interested in research, so they approached us. The big thing with concussion is very complex. It's quite hard to diagnose. You know, if you get knocked out cold on the pitch, that's quite an easy one. That's a really easy one. But there's a whole spectrum of symptoms in concussion. So one of the greatest challenges for the physio and the medical team on the side of the pitch is to know when someone is concussed, so to know when to remove someone from play. Mm-hmm. And then over the next couple of days or weeks, to know when it's safe for them to go back. So they were looking for what we call field tests, so useful, easy tests that can be used pitch side to help make a decision on a diagnosis, and then what we call prognosis, which is over the next couple of weeks when we know that somebody has been concussed. So we got together, as you know, in Trinity, we've got a big neuroscience department, physiology, bioengineering, and we got together as a team and thought, how can we design a battery of tests that would complement what's already going on with the clinical intuition of the physios and medics? So we're looking at something called blood biomarkers. So it's a blood test. Now, that would be done if you ended up in hospital in A&E after something like a car crash or a bicycle accident. They would test these markers in your blood, which they're a measure of something going on in your body, which is a brain injury. And we saw that there could be potential for doing this in rugby. It's been done in boxing. There was an interesting study done in boxing where they looked at some blood biomarkers, and they found that after about boxing, there was a rise in certain levels of proteins in the peripheral bloodstream, the general bloodstream, that it shouldn't be there, suggesting that it was a brain injury. So we decided we'd look at this in rugby. So we have done this. So we've tested players before they took any impact at the beginning of the season and after games, and then after any of them have been concussed. And we're developing this test, and then we then teamed up with there's a diabetes hospital in Denmark, the largest one in Europe, and they had some funding from the NFL, the American football, to look at this in athletes, and they have some state-of-the-art equipment there. And they are looking at something called metabolomics, which is looking at multiple molecules in your blood and patterns of molecules, very sophisticated. So they are also testing our bloods for us. Now, the beauty of that is that's done generally in diabetes. Everybody knows that. It's a simple blood test that you do if you have diabetes. And we thought, well, if that could be developed for rugby and for any other sport, it would be a great field site test. It would be something that could be done in the changing rooms. It could maybe become routine. So we've actually made some great progress with that, some interesting findings. And we've mapped the pattern of metabolites that are mapped against brain injured patients. So that's exciting, and we're going to develop it further. So the study is ongoing. Initial results are really exciting.
So how close do you think you are to developing something that would be, you know, transferable to a pitch side test, if you like, if a player comes off suspected concussion, that, you know, these findings could lead to a test that would almost instantaneously deliver a result of whether they could continue or not?
Well, it's hard to know exactly how long that's going to be. What we have done is we've developed a test now, which was quite interesting when we started. The researchers at Steno said, you know, this might be like looking for a needle in a haystack, because there's, you know, a couple of hundred metabolites in your system, and we're matching them against a known group of patients with brain injury. But we've actually found that pattern now. So that's the hardest bit done. So from there on, we now can develop the system. So we actually still have to send our bloods to Denmark, but we're working on a system where we can actually bring that to pitch side and at least to the medical centre where they'll be assessed afterwards. It's a little bit down the line. It's hard to know, but hopefully it's not too distant future.
Have you got the necessary kind of backing and funding to pursue this as far as you'd like then?
Well, at the moment, it's we are funded by the NFL through their Head Health Challenge program, which
so
is
plenty of money.
Well, the project is funded. There is an initial start of the project, so you know we just started this project with a little bit of funding we had from Trinity and with the goodwill we had from Steno Diabetes. And I think, you know, I think if we do this well, well, hopefully it will generate its own funding. If you have to, you know, if you're going to do a project, do it well, get the results out, and then hopefully we'll be able to develop it further then.
And you've mentioned boxing already, obviously rugby, and well documented the issues that they've had to face, particularly World Rugby over the last couple of years in putting mm-hmm. protocols in place. But I just imagine this is something that's transferable. I mean, concussion is concussion no matter what the sport.
Yeah, exactly. So it should be transferable, yeah.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
Okay,
so,
super.
So it's exciting, yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. Listen, we wish you all the best with it, Fiona, and thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Okay, thanks.
A lot. Dr. Fiona Wilson there. Great stuff. Just want to get an insight, I suppose, into what exactly they have been doing and, I suppose, how quickly this can be rolled out. It's for the benefit of all players in all sports, which would be brilliant. Okay, 51552, Johnny Ward, how are you?
Great, you, yeah.
You're
great.
A happy man. You've got your Galway. Is that your Galway United jersey yet? You know.
It is. Yeah.
You're a stubborn man.
Ireland jersey is rather sweaty.
Is it right? I thought it might
be. I'm on an adrenaline buzz since the weekend.
It was incredible.
I was at the final, both finals last year. There's no sport like hurling that can make you feel the way it does. I hadn't actually slept much over the weekend, and it suddenly dawned on me on Sunday night that pure adrenaline was getting me through. And yesterday I was absolutely shattered. Now the 10 points I had didn't help either. but when you think about the whole Noel McGrath thing, and you know, even Anthony Cunningham going over to him, the whole crowd standing up, I'm just memories of Ir Litanian running like a madman at the final whistle. I know we haven't won anything, but it was I can't explain the feeling of that, and I imagine playing must have been just something else.
Well, I tell you, I was in an elite household on Sunday afternoon with all my family sitting around and no connections to Galway whatsoever, and everybody on the couch screaming and roaring for Galway to win that match. And again, nothing against Tip. I was talking to Claire McNamara, a resident Tip fan in the sports department, and she was obviously gutted, but nobody would begrudge Galway that kind of a performance, because it has been due. And I just hope now they take that next step and beat the stuffing out of those lads sitting on your left hand side there with Gary.
Well, it's you know, the man to my right as well, it's kind of Mayo football and Galway hurling. People are now suggesting it's going to be the Mayo football Galway hurling double, because they haven't won it in so long.
That's
the best year. There is a feeling that, you know, a general feeling among the population that they want Galway hurling to, I don't remember Galway win the All-Ireland, and most of the fans there wouldn't have remembered it last Sunday, and it's just every year desperate frustration to get to a final. And I genuinely think we do have a big chance of beating Kilkenny now. I think if we dominated 10 of the 14 positions, I'd say, except Callanan, who was probably unmarkable. I don't think TG Reid is going to be quite as effective as him, and the belief this team has, I can't believe that the pride in the jersey they showed and the refusal to lie down after goal after goal after goal after goal.
Yeah, no, it's been brilliant. Gary, I'll give you one opportunity to defend her, because, in fairness, we haven't had much time to chat today.
I think Galway have no chance. I was delighted that Tip got beaten. Tip were my big fear. Galway were phenomenal, great performance, but they can't do it two games in a row. If they do it two games in a row, that performance is still not good enough to beat Kilkenny.
Wow.
Harsh.
What do you think about that, people? 51552. Tell that cat to get stuffed. We have to take a very quick break. We're back with Racing and Johnny, and we'll try and squeeze in some golf as well in a minute.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
The Judgment International is the feature, of course, on day one in York tomorrow. Johnny Ward is with us, and three-time winner of the race, Mick Kinnan, is on the line. Hiya, Mick.
Good evening.
It's good to talk to you. Listen, would See the Stars be the most memorable for you of the three wins? Because of, the mic's a bit off there. Can you hear that okay, yeah?
Yes, I can, yeah.
Would See the Stars be the most memorable of the three for you because of how special he was?
It was, yeah. It was the last roll of the dice for me, really. So, but yes, absolutely.
You must have enjoyed going over there, though. I mean, like, given your record there, I know a lot of people speak very fondly of it, but your own memories?
Listen, it's probably one of my favourite tracks to ride on, and it's a very fair track, great place to be, and... it's less maybe pompous than at Royal Ascot, and it's a great meeting to go to.
Who do you fancy in the big one tomorrow? Because we're kind of splitting the camp here between Golden Horn and Glen Eagles.
Well, Glen Eagles has to improve at the trip to beat Golden Horn. He has to find a good bit on ratings. I for me would be on Golden Horn, because it's a mile two and 100 yards. You know, it is a stamina test, and I don't see Glen Eagles improving at the trip.
And what about the fact that Ryan Moore won't be there? Is that a negative in your book? And again, no disrespect to Joseph, but
no, he knows the horse well, and he's got a confidence in him. No, I don't see it as a negative. No, I think, in fairness to Joseph, he's won on him plenty before, so he knows him well. So yeah. His biggest problem is his opposition.
You have a horse running just before the Judgment, is that right?
Well, I bred a horse, yes. Yeah. A horse called Taskar in the Voltigeur. So yeah, I'm eagerly looking forward to seeing him perform. They've supplemented him for the Voltigeur at a cost of 15,000. So
wow.
I'm hoping they're right.
Yeah, 9-2 at the moment. I'm just looking at the odds here. So would it be worth a couple of quid each way, perhaps?
Well, I'm hoping. But you see, I'm looking through rose-coloured glasses. I'm as a breeder, I'm not looking at it exactly objectively. But he has to go and improve a bit. But he's they hold him in high regard. It's going to be tough to beat Storm the Stars, but he's had a very busy season, and Ballyhos, who won the Group 2 at Royal Ascot. So, listen, it's a big step, but they think he's up to it.
Okay, I'm sorry we got squeezed for time, Mick, but enjoy the race tomorrow, and sure, look, if you have a winner, we might give you a call tomorrow evening.
All right, okay.
Thanks a million. Mick Canan there, three-time winner of the Judd Mon tomorrow. We have to go to Old Trafford. What's going on, Darren Sanage?
Well, this is a bit of a surprise. Club Bruges have scored at Old Trafford. Michael Carrick with an own goal. It came in from a free kick that was quite soft, given away by Matter. It came in right-footed, and Carrick slid in, and he knocked it past his own keeper. Before that, United had been very bright. Yanazai, Memphis and Rooney all going close, but United are now behind. We played 10 minutes.
Oh,
United 0, Bruges 1.
Nervous times at Old Trafford. Gary, what about that as a Liverpool fan?
Yeah, we had no trouble with them in 1978, I think so.
Okay, Johnny, before we leave it, who are you tipping up tomorrow in the big one? Are you on Gleneagles or Golden Horn?
Yeah, the most likely winner is Golden Horn, but Gleneagles is an outstanding horse. I know Joseph O'Brien is wasting down big time to do the weight on him. If he can hold on to him, and Ballydoyle are going to have a big role in how this race is actually run with Cougar Mountain in it. Gleneagles is a bit like Franklin, that he's coming into this race from being the outstanding miler of the three-year-old generation. I do have a slight doubt about the trip, but I think he's going to run a massive race. He's 5-1. The other lad is 8-11. He's a no-brainer each way bet to me. I think he's going to run a massive race. Very, very, very good horse.
Okay, hang your hat each way on Gleneagles. Gary, you have 10 seconds to give us your tips for the golf this weekend.
Webb Simpson, Ryan Moore, Charles Howell, and in Denmark, Bjorn Carlson and Bland. And well done to Thomas Mulligan, who got picked in the Jack Lees Trophy today.
Okay, great stuff. I'm so sorry we got squeezed. Johnny, we'll come in maybe Thursday night. You're definitely in Friday for a weekend of fun. Gary's back in Thursday and Friday. Louise is on the way. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.